afternoon. So today we're going to continue talking about bit manipulation, which we started last time by talking about shifts for moving bits where we want them, given that we can't just set up wires to put them where we want them, because we have registers that contain fixed numbers of bits and fixed locations. And how this was equivalent to multiplication and division. But first, some other notes. So on quizzes, there are a lot of people who are not happy with the quizzes. And so I'd like to say, yes, I know the quizzes are hard. It is intentional that they are not answerable by just looking for that particular fact specified by the multiple choice answer in the slides. I intend them to be answerable by knowing the material from the slides, etc., plus some thinking about it, and maybe sometimes I miss the mark. And their main purpose is not to boost up your grade, because they certainly don't do that. It's to have you review material other than just before our three exams, and to give me a warning sign that, hey, maybe I didn't cover something very well and need to go back to that. And they're graded because if I didn't grade them, a lot of you wouldn't do them or wouldn't take them seriously. And let's talk a little about the quiz, post-quiz from last week, which there was a lot of problems with. So this first question is about what is a risk-like thing to do? What is a thing our reduced instruction set will do? And option A is simpler instructions can be encoded in less space than complicated instructions. Is this a typical thing that a risk-like instruction set would do? So there's a couple ways to answer this. So the most direct way is on the slide, I list one of the typical attributes of risk as fixed length instructions, which this is not. But when you think about risk, I want you to start from the heuristic that risk is about making the hardware simpler. Needing to deal with multiple instruction lengths doesn't make things simpler. Doesn't matter that some instructions are more complicated or not, you still have two cases you need to deal with when you could have just had one. So, second option is common operations like pushing a value on the stack have special dedicated instructions. So this makes things simpler when you're like writing assembly. Having a push instruction is very convenient. But you don't need it. You could have written an add and a move. And in RISC, we're going to focus on what instructions are useful and easy for the hardware to provide. We're not going to look so much at what are common idioms in the program to choose our instructions. We're going to look at what are things that programs want to do that we can do well in hardware. So we're not going to make shortcuts for things like push in particular, which is complicated. So if you remember, for example, from this week's pre-quiz, pop requires us to write two registers. That's a lot of extra complication in the hardware for a convenient instruction. A RISC architecture is not going to do that. They might implement special instructions that are easy to implement, but they're not going to do complicated things, even if they're really common, like push. So more registers I mentioned. This, it's more hardware, but it's simple to design hardware. You just copy and paste what you already have. And fewer ways of specifying operands, simpler hardware, also simpler assembly, but harder to write assembly that does what you want. So you need more instructions, like we saw when translating x86 to y86. So on this question about translating C to assembly, can someone tell me what was wrong with this commonly chosen answer? Why is that not a correct translation? Yes?
Well, in the condition you're adding R12 and RBX, that also changes RBX, and so your condition is then changing.
Yeah, so that add R12 RBX, because we continue to assume that B is an RBX, there's nothing in the loop which would do otherwise, that's B plus equals A, which is not something the loop is supposed to do. And on this one, maybe this was too tricky of a question. The problem with A is that R15 is not a register we have in Y86. See you. Which yes, maybe a tricky question. So then we have the last question, which is a bit more substantive. This was trying to get at the difference between microarchitectures and instruction sets. And the thing you should remember, the big picture I wanted you to infer all these answers from is that instruction set is the software interface. It's what you see from assembly. So from assembly, you don't get to know how long your things take to execute. You like have to measure that separately. It's not part of what the instructions do as far as you're concerned when is my assembly program correct. But all these other things are. Whether you have floating point or not, that's going to change your assembly, right? If you want to use floating point, you want to have floating point instructions. Otherwise, your hardware is not helping you do that. Yes?
So the number of cycles that each instruction takes to execute, if your instruction set includes complex instructions that take many cycles, isn't that an attribute of the instruction set?
So the question is, if our instruction set includes complex instructions that take many cycles, isn't that an attribute of the instruction set? So the complex instructions are, but how long they take to execute is part of the microarchitecture. So maybe we can find a way of implementing those instructions so they only take one cycle. If we can, it's still the same instruction set. That we find a faster or slower way of implementing the instructions doesn't change what the instruction set is. So yes, so those are instructions which maybe can't possibly take just a fixed amount of time, but how long they take, even though it just physically can't be a fixed amount of time, is not part of the instruction set. Like, it depends on the implementation. Different implementations might differ in that. Like, some implementation might, take thousands of cycles to do it, some might take tens. And that's not part of the instruction set, except how long it takes, whether it's efficient or not.
But the relative complexity of instructions?
So the relative complexity, as far as what they do, is defined. As far as how they're implemented, isn't. And the amount of time they take is all about how we chose to implement them. So for example, x86 has these obscure instructions for doing something called binary coded decimal. This is a number representation thing, which notably we do not teach. But it has these instructions which are almost never used. So they probably could be implemented a lot faster than they are, but they aren't because they don't care. Right? It's not that they're bad and they're that complex, but they're implemented relatively slowly compared to how fast they could be on modern x86. Because they're not important instructions. And so you have those sorts of choices made by hardware designers about what instructions they want to make fast or slow, and that's not part of the instruction set. It's the same assembly running, they've just made a choice about which ones they're going to implement well. And which ones they're going to try to save cost or space when implementing. So, next mixed one, which I've dropped from the quiz, is the size of memory addresses. So I think this is part of the instruction set, but there's some interpretations where you might say it's not. I think it's part of the instruction set because this is basically saying, what does the move for memory instruction do? What calculation does it do? How big are the numbers there? That's what the size of the memory address means in, I think, the most natural interpretation. So any other questions on the quiz? The post-quiz? Yes?
Will exam questions come from the quizzes?
Will exam questions come from the quizzes? Generally, I think things I have asked on the quiz are fair to ask on exams. But there will probably be different kinds of questions on exams. Partly because they're not open book, We want them to be easier to grade than the quizzes, in the sense that we don't want to have to look at comments as much, hopefully. But they are definitely fair game to ask. Okay, so let's move back to our... where we were last time. So last time we talked about shift left. That's where we ended up, I believe. And this was the opposite of shift right. We have some bits at the bottom of a number. We want to move them to a higher part of the number. This is the operation that does that. It moves bits from the lower, less significant parts of a number to the more significant parts. This is what we have provided by the hardware, since we can't just wire things up like this ourselves, because the wire is fixed. And in the bottom part, we shift in zeros, because we have to put something in that part of the register result. So zeros is the most logical choice. And this left shift works out to exactly like multiplying times powers of 2. So 1 times 2 to the 0 is 1, 1 times 2 to the 2, 1 is 2. Same with 10 times 2 to the 0 is 1, times 2 to the 1 is 20, and so on. And it also happens to work with 2's complement and negative numbers. You can figure out yourself why that's the case. We're not going to test you on that. So, and in this case, there's no rounding to deal with, so we just get, you can change this mathematical operation that way to that type of multiply to a shift. So any questions on left or right shifts? Okay, so let's go on to a little bigger problem. So let's say instead of extracting a byte of the instruction, I've extracted 16 bits, but I want to still get that I code part. So how do I write some C code to extract just the I code from this? And just like when we started, you already know all the operators you need. You've used them before to do this. You can do this with arithmetic. Yeah?
Could you possibly do like a bit shift
right? Okay, a bit shift right? Left? Right would be... right, yes. A bit shift right. Yeah, so that would be a good first step. So then, if we do a bit shift right, we get 0001, 1111, 0010. And this is what we want, but we have all this junk still. So how do we get rid of that? And there's some arithmetic operator you've almost certainly used before which does this, in addition to a way we'll talk about today. Yes? XOR? Is that what you said? Not quite close. We'll get to what that looks like in a bit. There's an operator you've almost certainly used that can do this, which is arithmetic. So how would you do this with arithmetic? Yeah.
Modulus.
So if we, one way of thinking about this is that we have 16 times this number plus this number. So if we divide by 16, that's just the remainder. So just like we started with division, divide by 16, take the modulus of 16. Take the modulus with 256 if you want to first extract the lower 8 byte bits and then move it over. So these both are ways of extracting that with just arithmetic that you should already know about. And you might say, well, you told us that division was really slow, but we can replace these divisions with shifts and make them fast. So how about modulus? Is modulus really slow? And it turns out that on almost all architectures, the way a modulus gets compiled is with a division operator. So it is as slow as division. So we're going to want something better. And it's easy to manipulate these individual bits in hardware the same way we could move wires around when we were extracting values and we had this shift alternative. It's easy to select a few wires in the middle and do whatever you want with them. So we want to expose this to the hardware like we exposed moving a subset of the wires and working on them with shift. And we're going to use something called bitwise operators to deal with this. And to introduce that, I'm going to start with a truth table for AND. So AND is our simple logic gate operation. If you remember the reading, this is the most basic component, so this is really simple in hardware. Really easy to do. And let's think about what ANDing with 0 and 1 does to a value. So if we AND a bit with 1, we take a bit and we keep it the same. If we AND a bit with 0, we take the bit and clear it. So we can think of, you know, if we specify what to AND with, we can specify whether we keep or remove a value if we're ANDing with something. That's sort of a programmatic way you can imagine specifying keep or remove. And to support this sort of idea, an operator that is implemented in C and in assembly is bitwise AND. We treat a value as an array of bits and AND with that. So we can have this mask where we select what bits we want to keep, what bits we want to clear, and we just AND bit by bit, sort of applying that program we've specified in the mask. So for example, if we have 2 and 4, 2 ampersand 4, 2 is 0, 0, 1, 0 in binary, we take 0 and 0 is 0, 1 and 0 is 0, 0 and 1 is 0, and we get all 0 results. If we have 10 and 7, we take 1 and 0, 0 and 1, 1 and 1 is 1, but everything else is 0. So we're just treating it as an array, doing each bit at a time. And by choosing what value we specify, we're effectively saying, keep the bits I've specified in what I'll call a mask, and get rid of all the others. Any questions on this idea of what bitwise AND does as far as selecting bits? So as I said, this exists in C with that single ampersand operator, and it's in assembly as the AND instruction, which we have in Y86. And in hardware, this is really simple. So we just have an AND gate for every bit. It's really fast. These AND gates all work in parallel, even though we have 64 of them. They're all working in parallel. They're all independent of each other. It's a really fast, simple operation in hardware. So it's really easy to provide an instruction that does this, even though it's 64 calculations. And if we apply that to our example we started with, we can do the replacement with a shift that we have, and then we also do an AND with a mask which specifies what bits we care about. So in this first case, I have F, because that has ones in the bottom four bits, which is where the I code we want to extract is going to be. In the second case, I have F0, because it has ones in those top four bits, which is where what we want to extract is going to be. And these compile to nice, simple, fast assembly, no division instructions or anything like that. So we have bitwise AND, and as some of you are aware, there are other operators, other gates, we can also expose in the same way. And like AND, they have their sort of intuitive uses. So for AND, the way we think about it is what we're ANDing with, we're specifying, conditionally clear bits or conditionally keep bits. So that's what the AND operation is used for as far as how we're manipulating a number. When we want to keep some bits versus remove some, we use AND. And we just need to choose the right thing to AND with to choose the bits we want. So there's also OR. OR lets us conditionally set bits no matter what they are already. And we have XOR, which lets us flip bits conditionally. We choose what bits to flip by putting a 1 in the mask, 0 otherwise. 0 to keep the bit the same. So these ideas make sense, where I'm getting these operations for each of these bitwise operators. And these all work like bitwise AND. It's all treated as an array of bits, and do each pair of bits do the operation. So bitwise OR is either of them are true, bitwise XOR is exactly one of them is one, then we have a one. There's one other bitwise operator, which is a little unlike the others, because it only takes one operand, and that's what I'm going to call complement. And that's the bitwise version of negation, not. So unlike the not operator, it just flips the bits. It doesn't return what, 0 or 1. It flips each bit individually. So if we take not of the complement of 0, we get a number with all bits set to 1s, which as a signed number would be negative 1. If we do something like 2, flip all the bits, we get all the bits flipped, which as a signed number happens to be negative 3. And in C, the result of complement has the same signedness or unsignedness as the operand you passed. So if you want an unsigned result, not negative, you need to start with an unsigned parameter. So this makes sense, getting these values. So those are the operands. Those are the basic tools we have to work with to manipulate bits in software, things that are easy to do in hardware. This is how they're exposed to us. So I'm going to go through an example of dealing with the ternary operator, which is a nice example of how can we manipulate bits. But to start off, you need to know what it is, because many of you haven't seen this before. So this exists in C, C++, Java. You probably haven't used it, which is perfectly fine. A lot of people don't like it. But it's just a shorthand for if else, which can be used in the middle of a statement. So if x, then y, else c. So we're going to look at implementing this ternary operator with bitwise things. The idea is that we could get assembly which will have no jumps, which maybe would be useful for performance, maybe not. And we're going to start simple. So to simplify it, I'm going to start with, let's say x, y, and z are all zeros and ones, and I want to do this. Okay. So I have x is 0 or 1, y is 0 or 1, z is 0 or 1, and I want to compute this result without something that's going to compile into a conditional jump. So what would be a first step that you might try to do this? Where would you start? Yeah.
Since you probably, since the transition is like if x, you probably want to AND something with x.
Okay, so you have this idea that we're going to AND something with x. Okay. Any other ideas where we should start? And right. So we have x and blank. Any other starting places? Yeah.
Oh, actually, did you just say what that means again?
This is if x, y, else z. So, other starting places, other ways you might start to approach this problem? Yeah. Okay, so you have this idea that, oh, yeah, there's this nice solution. Of our result is x times y plus not x times z, which is an actual correct solution, and is not so great because times is maybe not the fastest thing to do. So that is a correct solution and a good way of thinking about it. And there's one thing you did there, which is still a good idea for approaching this problem in general, And that's that we split it up into two halves. We split this problem up into first part, let's get y if x is true. Second part, let's get z if x is false. And that's a good first step in general, even if you don't have a multiplication operator and you can't figure out how to do that, you don't see this multiply trick. The right first step is, divide this into simpler problems, and a simpler problem is, if x is true, give me y, and if x is false, give me z. That makes sense? So, and that's what I would recommend generally trying to do when you have some weird problem like this, which we tell you to do with some constrained set of operations, is find sub-problems that will help you solve it, and then use that. So if we solve each of these sub-problems, we could OR these two together and get the final answer. Because 0 OR with Z is going to be Z, Y OR with 0 is going to be Y. Because OR just sets all the bits that are any either one has set, 0 has no bits set. So yeah, I recommend a first step is doing this. And there's a little bit simpler thing we can do than multiplying to solve the first problem. So you had a solution of x times y. There's something a bit simpler we can do. And a way to discover it is by writing a truth table. So we have our subproblem here of if x, then y, else 0. And if we write out the truth table, it looks kind of familiar. It's in fact exactly the truth table for AND. Which is a little easier for the hardware to do than multiplication. And works because of this constraint up here. And we have the first part, a translation into nice fast bitwise operators that compile into one definitely fast assembly instruction. Now we need the second part. And you can observe that we just want to flip what we're ending with. So we just take the opposite of x. So we can take the complement and presumably know that all the other bits of z are 0, so the results are going to be 0 in those bits, so it doesn't matter that we're flipping bits we don't care about. Or we could XOR with 1 to turn x from 0 to 1. Yes?
So it looks like this only takes one input, so why is this called a ternary operator?
The question is, this only takes one input? The inputs are this input, and this input. That's why it's called ternary. Yeah, so for this, this we just observed, it's the same as the original problem, but with x reversed, so we just invert x, and it's the same thing. And then we put that together, we just say it's each half OR together, first half where we get y if we want it, second half where we get z if we want it, and that's our result. Okay, this solution makes sense for 0 or 1 values. So let's remove that constraint and say only x is 0 or 1, y and z are any number, and let me fix that. So what do we do in this case? I want to remove that silly constraint that it was just 0 or 1. Why would we bother doing it? That's not a very interesting case. How can we take more advantage of that our bitwise operators act on all the bits of the register, not just the bottom one? And we can do the same idea of splitting it up into these two cases. But we have to be a little pickier about what we're ending with. So we can have, you know, probably we want to, if we're using this way of splitting up the problem, we want to end with something which will select all the bits when x is 0, when x is 1 for y, and none of the bits otherwise. But we need to construct that. So yeah, we want all 1s when x is 1 to keep y, all zeros otherwise to clear all the bits. So the simplest thing to do is we take the 0 or 1 part of x, so the bottom bit is 1, and we just move that bit over 1, move it over 2, move it over 3, and so on until we've covered all the bits. And we OR all those together to get one number, and that'll work. And it's a completely valid solution. It's not very efficient, but it's valid. And this is kind of disappointing because there is a really efficient solution in hardware. You just take one wire and you send it lots of places. Now it turns out, because of more complicated operations that our processors implement efficiently, they have specialized circuits for, there is one operation that exists in C and assembly that's implemented pretty efficiently in processors that gives us a shortcut for this. And it's not obvious at all. And that's negation. So you need to think a bit about how does two's complement work? Figure out what's going on here. So if we have two's complement, so one way of viewing it is that we have this wheel of numbers here, starting at 0, going around to the maximum possible value, then going to the most negative, and going back around to 0. And 0 is represented with the all 0 bit pattern, and everything above 0 is represented with the same bit pattern we have as unsigned. And given that, the thing just before 0 is the all 1s bit pattern. So negative 1 is all 1s. And since we started with 0 or 1, you either end up with 0, which is still all 0s when we negate it, or negative 1, which is all 1s. And because our processors really care about making subtraction efficient, this is going to be an efficiently implemented operation in the processor. And so that gives us our shortcut here, which is that we can just take minus x when x is 0 or 1 and get the mask we want. We either get 0 or negative 1, which is all 1s, and that's exactly what we want to end with y, to either keep all of it or none of it. So any questions on what's going on here? Yeah?
Why does all 1s indicate y?
All 1s indicate what? Because we're ending with a value, and if you remember what we said for the truth table here, that if we end with 1, we're keeping a bit. Because if we look at the one part of the truth table, one column of the truth table, the bits stay the same. And if we end with 0, we clear the bit. And then we still have the second half of this, which, if you remember, was the part where we went to get z. And there, we just want the opposite masks. So you just need to turn 0 and x being 0 into 1, and we can use the same solution. So we just need to flip that bit that represents x, and the operator we had to flip bits was XOR. So one way of doing this is to XOR x with 1, to flip it from 0 to 1 or 1 to 0, and then take the negation of that. And that gives us an actual solution with the same correction I made before. So, this makes sense? Yeah.
I don't understand why the opposite of negative x is x.
So we went to, so x was 0 or 1 to begin with, and we basically wanted to turn it from 0 or 1 to 1 or 0. Because we still want to have it be not, we don't want to flip all the bits because we still want to use the negative 0 or negative 1 trick. Okay, so we're almost to the point where we've constructed something from these bitwise operators, which does the same thing that we would have done naturally with conditional jumps. But there's one more step, which is that we still have this constraint that x was exactly 0 or 1. So the natural way of fixing this is to use the same solution we used before, but somehow turn x into 0 or 1 from 0 or not 0, like C expects. So what would be a way to do that? We have x is some non-zero value, we want it to turn it into 1. And x is 0, we want to keep it as 0. What's one way of doing this? We're basically going to see if any bit is set in the number. Yeah?
Do we use or and then shift x and use like every single bit of x and use it or with?
Yeah, so we can do basically the opposite of what we saw earlier as the naive solution to constructing that bit mask. That we just shift over x every possible amount. So we'll get to looking at that solution, which seems like it works, but it's pretty inefficient. So in C, of course, if I didn't tell you not, you couldn't use it, we have these simple operators, the negate operator. You might say, well, this is probably not implemented by shifting x over each possible amount and ORing, in software at least. And then assembly that compiles to a test, and then there's this set a register based on the condition codes instruction. So it's not conditional jump at least, but it's taking advantage that our hardware apparently has special hardware to test for zero, which presumably it does because of the zero flag being implemented. And if you had that, you can do this naturally, but yeah, we'd like a solution without this. So I'm talking about efficiency. I'd like to go into, before we go into, whether this solution, the alternate solution, is a good idea, to how fast operations are. So on a modern processor, so the typical modern desktop processor, something like a bitwise AND, OR, XOR, shift, add, subtract, compare, all take about 1 cycle. And where integer multiplies, like 1 to 3, maybe a little more, and integer divides, like 10 to 150. And so this is what happens. And this is kind of non-intuitive, because you might say, as I pointed out, that add, subtract, and compare are considerably more complicated operations than bitwise AND, OR, and XOR. Why are they just as fast? And this is a processor design decision. So for typical applications, making AND really, really fast is not going to help nearly as much as making AND fast. So they've devoted more effort to making things like adds and subtracts fast. They have more hardware to do them. And they don't care about doing the extra complexity that would be necessary to have bitwise AND be a different speed, even if it was faster than AND. Just because it's not common enough in the programs they want to run fast. So it's not that it's not simpler, it's that it's just not implemented faster because they made a design decision about what mattered. So this tells us, what things are actually worth avoiding versus not. So in particular, it means that conveying in practice that exclamation point x is pretty fast. Even though it seems like that's a more complicated operation, and even though it really is physically more complicated for hardware to do. But let's look back at our problem of doing is any bit set. And the simple solution is what specified is this not taking bang. If you don't have bang, you don't have plus, minus, things like that. You just want to use the bitwise ways we've talked about. The easiest thing to do is basically to take every bit and move it over to the last place. So you do a shift for each possible bit position and with one to select that bit. Remember, and is how we select bits we care about and remove all the others. And put them all together. If any of them are set, we want them to be set in the result. So that's the easiest way to do this. And this is pretty inefficient. So we can do some steps which apply in lots of cases where you might be solving problems similar to this, maybe ones which don't have such an obvious alternative way of doing it, like exclamation point. So one thing is that in this solution, I'm ending with one to extract each bit. And I don't need to do that every time. I can do that at the end. So the general observation is discarding all but the last top bit first and then doing it versus doing it and discarding all but the top bit are the same. And you can treat this similar to multiplication. So x times y, or I should do like z plus y times z equals x plus y times z. The same sort of rules apply if you know the algebra here. So it's just like distribution when you're doing algebra. You can do those sorts of transformations to get rid of lots of redundant operations when you do the natural divide it up into sub-problems, like extract each bit. So that saves us a little bit of space, but this is still pretty inefficient. And there's one way, particular way in which it's inefficient, and that's that we have this bitwise OR operator, which is performing ORs for every bit in the input numbers, and we're not using most of those results. So we have three bitwise OR operations, and if the input's four bits, each of those is doing four ORs, and we only care about one of them. We only are using, conceptually, this last OR gate, even though all the other ones are working. Why are we wasting all these results? Can we do better? So this problem makes sense. And one thing you can look at is what are we actually computing, say, the first time, if we don't do the end. We shift over one in OR. We actually get two results we care about. We get the first two bits ORed together and the last two bits ORed together. Those are part of our result of this single bitwise OR operation. So what we already naturally does the computation we want, we just need to consider extracting the result from one part of the number, one part versus the other. Yes?
Could you just take all the wires and connect them and any one of them has a voltage, then output?
So the question is, in hardware, would this be even simpler than having an OR gate? A bunch of OR gates? And the answer is no. It is not electrically stable. In hardware, you still need OR gates, but you wouldn't have all these OR gates that you're ignoring the result of. You'd actually use them in a way where you weren't. But we have this observation that we can at least make use of more than one of the OR gates per bitwise OR instruction. So we can do this one bitwise OR operation and get two ORs done that we care about. And then we can OR those two results together to get our results. So here we can get OR each pair of bits here, and then take the two pairs that were ORed together, put them in the same place, or them together to get our final result. And we've saved a bitwise OR operation. This makes sense? Idea? People shaking heads in various ways. So there's this general concept. The general thing to think about is each bit is separate. So if you have multiple computations to do, there is a way you can get, you have parallelism. You can do one operation and get lots of pieces of work done if you can place each piece of work in different parts of the numbers you're using. And you can extend this to operations which are more interesting than bitwise or. So for example, if we just want to add two pairs of numbers together, we can just put one of the pairs in the top of two numbers and one of the pairs in the bottom of two numbers, and just hope we have enough padding that the results don't overflow into each other. And do one addition and compute results for multiple of these numbers. And then you get this for free, just because when we perform additions, we kind of perform an addition of two numbers, we're kind of performing an addition of each of the digits kind of separately. You know, and this lets us do multiple sort of independent operations at once. This idea makes sense? Sort of one operation is really multiple operations. But this is kind of, both cases, it's kind of a hack. The intention of the bitwise OR operation is not really to provide this interface, but it's a convenient thing that's efficient if we can use it. The intention of addition is not to provide multiple additions at the same time. You have to like make sure that the numbers don't overflow. It's actually very tricky. But it's a nice idea, and it's a way that hardware, without adding much complexity, can give you more computing power. And it's been popular lots of times for hardware to provide specific support for doing operations like this, not just bitwise operations. So for example, 64-bit x86 has an instruction which is multiply four pairs of floating point numbers together, pairwise. And the idea is that implementing that instruction is not much more complicated than implementing multiply one pair of floating point numbers together. You just copy the hardware four times. So any questions on this? So this is a sort of more practical use for the skills you might get, like optimizing bitwise operations, is that we do similar tricks to make these sort of what are called vector operations, these multiple things at once, to do that efficiently. And this is actually really hard for compilers to figure out how to take advantage of something like a multiply four pairs of floats together instruction. So when we apply this parallelism idea, we can turn, for, you know, taking is any bit set of 32 from doing 31 ORs to doing just about, we just take OR every bit pair of bits together, or the pairs of pairs, or the pairs of pairs of pairs, and so on, up until we get down to one bit. You can think of it as a tree of OR gates, for example, and that's exactly what the hardware implementation that only did this would look like. And we sort of simulate that with a series of bitwise ORs and shifts. So in this case, this is not a particularly useful operation because we have a test instruction that does it, but the same principle can apply for things which maybe aren't such a natural fit to some other instruction where you want to manipulate bits and do it efficiently across the whole network. So any questions on how this works? Okay, good. So we're gonna have a lab which is gonna talk about, which is gonna have you do some bit puzzles, some things like what you've seen here, and a follow-up homework. And here are the sort of my general strategies for doing it. So use paper, like figure out what happens on paper, figure out what's in each bit, find the subproblems. And the general big things are mask and shift is your friend. Like if you want to get work on some bits, first move them to the bottom of the number and extract them. That's a good first step. If some bits are important, figure out how to extract those bits first. Remember the factor of distribute. That's how you take something which is way, way too long and make it kind of manageable. And use this general divide and conquer approach of find nice pieces of the problem that are simpler, solve each of them, and like or the results together if that's appropriate. It might be you need to use some other operation. And for making these more efficient, when you do this on some complex problem, you'll often notice that you're doing the same thing multiple times. It's good to like recognize that, and you can do less operations. If you were writing assembly, that would save assembly instructions. So for example, the version of the ternary operator with bangs I showed you earlier, we compute bang x twice. You can just do it once, and you'd hope that you generate assembly that would do that if you were cared about performance, rather than testing, doing the comparison twice. Yes?
Can you say one more time how the masking
works? Explain one more time how the masking works. So the idea of masking here is that, is that we have this part of X we want to extract. So we construct a mask where we have ones everywhere there's something we want to extract, and zeros elsewhere. And that's exactly this number I wrote down. Then I have this value I want to extract, but I actually want it here. So I just count how many places over I have to move it, and that's where the 4 comes from. And you could do it in either way. You could shift, then, and. Either is fine. Yes?
Doesn't the order you do that matter?
It does, but it just changes that the mask is. Yes. So you can do it in either way, but you just need to make sure you're setting your mask based on where things are when you're doing the ant. And the same masking principle applies. Say if I wanted to flip a certain some set of bits, it's the same idea. I figure out which bits I want to flip, set that to one, and use XOR. Okay, so since people seem clear on that, here's an exercise. So figure out which of these are correct versions of this operation of swapping the least significant, and the second least significant bitmost bit, and confer with your neighbors to see if you agree on which ones are right. And just like I said on the previous slide, I recommend using paper. Thank you. Yes. Question is there an order of operations? There is in C. I have tried to put parentheses everywhere. It's not obvious. If I have failed, please let me know. Yes, there's parentheses around here. Or is there? Oh, I see. That's just wrong. Shift, the second thing is a right shift. The first shift is a left shift, the second shift is a right shift. Indeed. Okay, who has answers to most of these about whether they're right? Okay, so I guess we'll give you more time. If people don't have answers or questions about how to even proceed. I'll take those too. Any? So there's two ways you can go about doing this. So one way is you can just take the problem I wrote there and try to solve it and see which things you can look similar to a solution, which often works. Or you can figure out what these do given that you say no, x equals a, b, c, d. So those are the bits in x. You can figure out what is shifting over by one do and ending with one. What is shifting doing that do, and so on. You figure out what happens to the bits, and whether you get the pattern you want, which is going to be A, B, D, C.
Thank you.
Okay, so who has answers now to at least whether some of these are correct? Who has no answers whatsoever? Who's not willing to tell me if they have any answers? Okay, some number of people. Okay, anyone willing to make an argument for why A is correct or incorrect? Okay, so you think C is correct. I would ask you about, let's start with A. Did you eliminate A? I see. Was there a reason you didn't think A looked right? Okay, so we're missing, so this is how I would like to reason about it. If I say, what does each sub-expression here do? So this here moves the second to last bit over to the first bit. That seems like a thing we want to do. Great. And this portion keeps all but the last bit in the exact same place, which is not something we want to do because that keeps the second to last bit in the same place, so this is wrong. And you can use similar reasoning on each of the others. Now, this is one way of going about it. So just sort of qualitatively, so we can look here. This is the same thing. This moves the last bit, the second to last bit, to the last position. Something we want to do. This here moves the last bit and all the bits before it over by one. So it moves the last bit to the second to last position, and also some other bits. And then we end with this mask, which is the complement of two. So it then keeps all bits but the new second to last bit, which is probably not what we want to do. So we've selected the right bit, put in the right position, and got rid of everything but it. Or kept everything but it. So that's not why that's not correct. So here, this part keeps everything but the last two bits in the same place. It's part of what we want to do. This part keeps everything, it takes the last bit and moves it over to the second to last position and gets rid of everything else. And this part takes the second to last bit, moves it over to the first position, and keeps only it. That's why C is a correct solution. And it also that would also be the sort of strategy you would do to solve this. You'd say, okay, first I want to move this bit to there, I want to move this last bit to the second to last position, the second to last position to the last position, two terms, and then I want to copy everything else. That's where you get the three parts. And that's why you'd expect a solution to have three parts. It'd be another heuristic to guess that A is probably not as worth looking at as the others. And version D is kind of close. So we have this selects the last bit, moves it over to the second to last position. This selects the last two bits, shifts over by one, so the last bit is lost, and the second to last bit goes to the last bit. So this whole part, so this whole thing here is the same as this thing here, in effect. So it's close, but then for some reason it XORs with the original value, which is going to mess up the last two bits we just put into place. So it's going to be right for the first bits, the bits before the second last two bits, but it's going to mess up the last two bits by taking the original values of the bits and flipping them, depending on whether they were set originally, from the correct values for the bits. Okay, so this makes sense. Okay, so next time we'll talk about a few more bit fiddling things. This took a bit more time than I expected, especially since I originally thought this was like a 2-minute question this morning, and obviously it wasn't. And then we'll go on to talking about what the reading was about, which is actually making a processor.